Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And when I visited the website of today's guest, I instantly felt a connection and knew we had to meet, and I'm just thrilled to share her with you. She is Sharon K. Miller, author of The Clay Remembers, published in 2015, The Clay Endures, July 2016, and The Clay Sustains, coming in 2017. And she grew up on the eastern shore of Maryland and now lives near Tucson, Arizona. Having fallen in love with words and reading and books as a child, she wrote her first book in the second grade. She thought that since books have a lot of words, all she had to do was fill a marble composition book with words and she'd have written a book. Every day she came home from school, climbed into the window seat and wrote. When the last word at the bottom of the page was written, she was one happy kid. Did she actually tell a story? No one will ever know, because the book was lost when the family moved a year later. Sad to hear that. Well, since then, she's taken a much more realistic approach to writing. After a career as a high school English and language arts teacher, which included a number of years as a teacher consultant for local affiliates of the National Writing Project in both Maryland and Arizona, she co-authored a successful university-level textbook, Doing Academic Writing in Education, Connecting the Personal and the Professional, as well as chapters in education texts. Two short memoir pieces were selected for publication in Seasons of Our Lives, Spring, and Tale of Our Lives, Reflection Pond. Award-winning stories from womenmemoirs.com. She is an occasional contributor to Publication Life blog, and she collaborated with Dr. Christy Kessler for her book, Surviving Healthcare, Five Steps to Cutting Through the BS, Getting the Treatment You Need, and Saving Your Life. And the three books of the Clay series were inspired by local history of the Sonoran Desert. And to prepare for writing these stories, Sharon researched the history of the Spanish Entrada into the southwestern United States and the archaeological history of the area, taking archaeology classes at the local community college and participating in archaeological excavations. The Clay Remembers was awarded a 5-star review from Reader's Favorite and an Indy BRAG Medallion for Excellence. As a writer, she is a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors, the Independent Authors Network, Women's Fiction Writing Association, the Arizona Archaeological and Historical Society, and Old Pueblo Archaeology. As an editor and owner of Buckskin Books, she belongs to the Editorial Freelancers Association, and I am so excited to learn more, so let's get going. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Sharon, you and I have so much in common. I have a home at the base of the Superstition Mountain in Arizona. And close by, not far from Tucson. And I've been several times to the ruins in Tucson. And many years ago, I owned two American Indian art galleries, one in Ohio and the other in Pennsylvania. And currently, I'm involved with healthcare and hospital safety. So we have many common interests.
Wow.
I know.
I'm just so glad you found me online.
I know. Me too. Now, I understand that the origin of the book title comes from When Clay Sings by Bird Baylor. And,
yes.
And it might be a nice way to begin today if you'd like to read what it was that inspired you.
Okay. When I started with the idea of writing these books and knew that I needed to take archaeology, I signed up for these courses at the community college, which were absolutely amazing. And I had an experience the first time we went to a site where we were going to do the excavation. And the instructor told us, feel free to pick up broken pieces of pottery sherds that were on the ground and look at them, but you're not allowed to carry them away for your own purposes. And I picked up this piece of broken pottery and turned it around in my fingers. And when I looked at the inside of it, my thumb was resting in what seemed like the thumbprint of the potter, the perfect fit. And I just had this sudden emotional response that I had touched the hand of a woman who lived 900 years ago.
Wow.
And when I shared that with one of the instructors, she said, you have to go look at and get Bird Baylor's book, When Clay Sings. It's a children's book, and it's beautifully illustrated. But it begins There are desert hillsides where ancient Indian pottery still lies half buried in the sand, and lizards blink at other dusty lizards that were painted on those pots 1,000 years ago. Now, Indian children make a game of searching for bits of clay that were once somebody's bowl or mug or cooking pot or dipper. Their parents look at what they find and tell them, "Remember, treat it with respect. It is so old." They say that every piece of clay is a piece of someone's life. They say it has its own small voice and sings it in its own way. Now that, I'm going to skip up to another part. Women must have spoken to the earth as they took its clay. They must have sung special songs for shaping the bowl, for polishing it, for baking it so it'd be strong enough to last long after the tribe was gone. And I'm going to skip up again. The songs had to be powerful enough to make the rain fall, the winds blow, and the seeds sprout in the dark earth. They say that even now, the wind sometimes finds one of those songs still in the clay and lifts it out and carries it down the canyon and across the hill. It is a small sound and always far away, but they say sometimes they hear it. And the whole notion of, you know, the earth as such a critical piece of all of our lives and the spirits that the earth carries from generation to generation, from century to century, that whole idea really just spoke to me as an outcome mm-hmm. of touching that little piece of clay.
Wow.
And it was then that the first book, The Clay Remembers, with an archaeologist character, actually came to mind. My original plan was to write the second book, the story of the homesteader's wife, who had been on the site of a very important archaeological site here in the Tucson Basin. You said you had been to some of the ruins in Tucson. Have you been to Catalina State Park?
Yes, yes.
And have you walked the interpretive trail
yes.
of the Romero ruin?
Yes, we had done that. Mm-hmm.
And that site,
the
Romero ruin site, is the primary site for all three books. In the first book, Anna, the archaeologist who's running from her abusive husband, hides out in Tucson and participates in what in real life was the excavation, the surveys and the excavation and the plans at Catalina State Park to create the park and to create the interpretive trail. And I invented some experiences for her, sort of based on actual excavation, but taking it further. And that experience of mine where I felt like I had touched the hand of the potter. And what's really interesting is how I wanted to weave into Anna's experience the experiences of the 19th century housewife or homesteader's wife. So the way she lived was hardly what you could call a housewife. And also to weave in the experiences of the woman who made the pot. So it's the story of one pot, three women, over the course of 800 years. So Anna finds the broken pieces of the pot and puts it together. But in doing that, she learns about the experiences of these women who preceded her in such a way that, you know, normal people don't. She sort of has this preternatural sense of other people's experiences.
So you've got the three books, but there's common themes that run between all three books.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And actually, you know, my first sense, when we first moved to the Tucson area, the Catalina State Park had not been open very long, and of course we went and visited it, and we walked the interpretive trail. And I remember reading those signs about, Francisco Romero and his wife living there in the 19th century. And they were, you know, historically, they were among the very first to leave the safety of Tucson, come around to the north side of the mountain, where Tucson was still a pretty far piece away, and try to establish a ranch in the midst of Apache depredation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember standing there, looking at the sign and saying, what the heck, and I don't think I said heck, a kind of man brings his wife out here at that time with nobody else around but Apaches.
Ooh.
And I kind of got caught up thinking, what in the world was Victoriana's life like during the time that she lived there? And I tried to do some research, and because, of course, she was a woman, there's not a whole lot there. But the Arizona Historical Society has a huge set of papers that were put together by the men in Tucson who felt that they were the pioneers of Tucson. So they collected all their papers. The Arizona Historical Society is actually an outgrowth of the Arizona Pioneer Society, which began in the 19th century. So all of these men who were big shots of some sort, as well as some who maybe weren't, collected all their papers. So the Francisco Romero papers are available at the Historical Society Museum. And I read them and couldn't really learn a lot about her, but one little piece of information kind of stuck out for me, and that was that Victoriana Okoboa, when I read about her and did some research into the Spanish Entrada, the Okoboas were Yaqui Indians, and actually possibly mixed blood, Yaqui and Tejano Odom, Papago, mm-hmm. as it was known at that time.
Right.
But in the Romero papers, there was this little notation that said Victoriana's father, Albino Okoboa, was born in Spain. And that struck me as very odd, and there was no record otherwise. And so I decided that perhaps his parents did not want to admit that their son had married an Indian. Mm. So they made up a backstory for him, for her. And so that kind of struck me, and I knew that I couldn't write the real story of Victoriana, so I created my own fictitious characters and their backstory and the family issues and things, and mm-hmm. that's in the play Indoors.
Okay.
But I'd also like to read a little piece from the play Remembers that illustrates Anna's, the archaeologist's, connection to the people from the past, particularly to the Hohokam woman who made the pot in the 12th century.
Okay.
In the book, Anna tries in the laboratory to reconstruct the pot, to glue it back together. You've probably seen pots and things that have been glued back together in museums.
Right.
And this is also based on an experience I had, because when I was taking the archaeology classes, the instructors were happy to let me go into the lab and get a package of, you know, sherds from an excavation and see if I could glue them back together. They taught me how to do it, and although there weren't enough pieces to make a whole pot, I did learn the strategies.
Interesting.
Techniques for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a scene in the play Remembers when Anna is struggling to put these pieces together, and it is precisely the experience that I had one day, similar to the one when I first picked it up and picked up a piece and put my thumb in the thumbprint. She examined the body pieces again, looking at each one carefully. She noticed some mostly undecorated shirts, some with smoke clouds from firing. They were all curved, and a few had simple red lines. It was a jar with a round bottom. It was here that the bottom of the pot began, curving downward into a rounded base. The line separated the design from the base. It would be an indicator of the jar's height if she could make a connection between those base pieces through the body to the shoulder and in and the rim. Identifying other base pieces would be significant in organizing the pieces for reconstruction. She would know in which direction to orient those pieces with the shoulder, the rim, and the other body pieces. On a hunch, she picked up two sherds from the base, both with a red line, and began turning them in her hands, looking for a fit. "Come on," she whispered. "Talk to me." For a fleeting moment, her hands moved independently of thought, and there it was. The two pieces fit together perfectly. And that's the experience that I had. Now, I took Anna's ability to kind of connect closer and extended it. So as soon as she gets these two pieces together, she has an immediate sense of the woman who made the pot, which goes on. She did not have to think about her work. Her hands simply worked the clay. She dipped her fingers into the precious water, shaped the neck evenly and smoothed the rim slightly, turning the vessel as she worked. Using a small, smooth stone, she polished the outside of the jar. She was already imagining the red scroll that she would add to the outside once it was ready. She would make them square instead of round. When the vessel was finished, fired, and decorated, it stood apart from the others. It was a rounded jar with a short, straight neck and a wide mouth. The interior had been smoothed by her gifted hands. Then back to Anna. Just as suddenly as it happened, it disappeared. Anna was here in the lab, and she had pot fragments before her. She picked up the two pieces again and held them against one another. This time her own hands held a portion of the Hohokam jar, the base from which the remaining sherds would rise. So I gave Anna a whole lot more credit for making contact with those people from the past than I actually did. But
I was going to say, you live through her and she lives through you. That's just so beautiful. What did the writing of these books do for you?
It has been a remarkable journey. Having, you know, the things that I have learned just about writing and about telling stories and learning about this desert that I fell in love with way back in the 70s. And I started writing these. I mean, my ideas for writing the stories probably date back to the late 90s when I first had the idea and I started taking the courses and things, but then life got in the way and I was writing these other educational things and working with student teachers and doing all kinds of educational stuff, and it all went into the back seat. And my husband finally said, "When are you going to write those books?"
Good old husband.
So he does the cooking and a lot of cleaning, and I do the writing.
Yay. How special to have a supportive person behind you as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what kind of feedback have you received? And then when you do receive it, how do you use that?
Well, there have been a couple of things that I did. I signed up on a website. I don't know whether you've heard of it before. It's called www.scribophile, scribophile.com. And it's the website on which you can post chapters and pieces of your writing, and you get feedback from other writers. They post theirs, you post yours. If you give people feedback, then you earn karma points that you can spend to put your chapters up, and so you get lots of feedback. And I met some of the most wonderful people through that experience, one of whom has just been amazing. He read and responded to both the first book and the second book in early stages, giving me lots of ideas, surprising me with what he told me from time to time that I've actually done. It was like, did I do that? did I really create these sets of oppositions that are going on in the first book. And he's been great, and I do take a lot of ideas from him. I also use beta readers, advanced readers, who give me some feedback. In fact, one of my sisters is one of my readers, and with the Clay Remember, she wrote me an email midway through the book saying, "I refuse to read another word." It's like, what?
Whoa.
What did I do? She said, no. I had written a scene where Anna's husband comes. He's found where she is. And it's a confrontation scene where her friends are actually able to surround her and insulate her from his violence and his behavior. And when I first wrote that scene that went out to the readers, I had her just kind of sit and let her friends tell him, you know, what they thought and to help get rid of him. And my sister said, "No, you have built Anna from the time she left her husband until this moment. She has been getting stronger. She's been getting more independent. She is developing a sense of herself, and then you let her sit there and wimp out."
Oh.
And I thought, she's right. Huh. That was what I did.
So funny.
So I had to revise that chapter wherein Anna stands up and says, "Okay, everybody out over to Minnie's apartment, her next door neighbor. I need to talk to my husband." and then my sister said, "Okay, I'll read the rest of it."
There you go. Well, that's important, though, to get that kind of feedback. That's how you learn and that's how you improve. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's a little scary to put it out there like that sometimes. But hey, if you're serious about what you're doing, I think it's valuable.
Another instance, too, this is more recent. I've actually made some changes in the Clay Remember since it was first published a year ago in May. And that was as a result of a professional evaluation wherein this person pointed to a particular chapter and said she didn't know why I actually used her husband's point of view in the first part of that chapter, which I had not done at any point in the book. Just suddenly, all at once, I have her husband's point of view. And this evaluator said she didn't understand where that came from or why it was there and it wasn't necessary. And I went back and looked and I said, she's right. I just wanted to describe that rock outcropping that was up there from where her husband climbed up to watch her as she worked at a site. And when I read back through it, I realized that everything that happens from the moment he grabs her at that point, all of the detail, everything about what he did in those 5 or 6 paragraphs didn't do anything. It was all going to be kind of summarized later because she's going to be saying, "Oh my God, he was watching us."
Right, right.
So I revised it and I'm uploading new interior files to the site and calling it a second printing. Not calling it a second edition.
Right.
But I think, you know, that was a good idea. And I'm not afraid to say, I need to change this book that's out there in the world. And hopefully other readers who come to it now will see that maybe it's a better book.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm so proud that you were able to take that bit of criticism and work with it to make the book better for future readers, because I think a lot of people just, when they get negative feedback, they're like, "Ah, oh, they don't know what they're talking about," and you just move forward. So congratulations for being able to do that. So what's next for you? What's coming up on the horizon?
Well, the Clay Endures is, it is with a printer right now. I have a book event to go to in Silver City, New Mexico, the end of this month. So I need copies to take with me. It's an event. It's the Clay Festival, in Silver City, New Mexico, and it's primarily people there who are taking classes and demonstrations and everything about making pottery. And I figured it was a perfect venue for me to sell my book.
Right.
And I went last year with The Clay Remembers and did very well with it because I was the only book there. Mm. Everybody else was selling ceramics. And
oh.
So we didn't have a lot of competition
right.
for books. And people were very excited about the prospect of the second book. So this year we're going back to Silver City for the Clay Festival, and I will have both books available then. And I'm hoping that by next year, the end of July, I'll have the third book available to sell at that venue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's been very good. I also wanted to make the pot. Now, the design that I used for the pot came from two different sources. One was the shape of the pot that I took from a pot from the time period. And then the other was the design that I took from another pot to create it. And so I took a pottery class. Mm. The first time I went through, I did a horrible job on the pot that I made. It was very primitive and very amateur.
Yeah.
I took the class the second time, and the instructor took me to the west branch of the Santa Cruz River and said, this is where the Tankaverde phase clay came from. So I got to use the exact clay that my character from the 12th century used to make the pot in the three stories.
Oh, my.
And I made two pots for that class, pretty close to identical. Painting the lines doesn't look all that identical, but one of them, I took a dental pick and scored the outside of it so that it looks like it's been glued back together.
Okay.
And left, cut a piece out of the rim to show the piece that was missing when Anna was putting it back together. And then the other one is, you know, not, doesn't look like it's been put back together. So it's a lot of fun to carry those with me to book events. And people look at them and say, oh, wow, that's really something.
That really is something. It's quite impressive. I'm impressed. Well, now, where can folks go to learn more about you and where can they purchase your books?
Okay. Well, Amazon has the books up. And I think I've given you the links that you can post mm-hmm. on the website. I also sell them from my own website, which is www.sharonkmiller.com. And they're also at the ebooks available from the Kindle store at Amazon, from Smashwords. Barnes & Noble is carrying it in their online. So The Clay Remembers is out there and is available. The Clay Endures should be available for pre-sale within the next week at Amazon. So I'll send you the link to add to the page.
Excellent.
As soon as it's available.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure by the end of July, I've officially made July 30th, the day of the Clay Festival, the launch date. But I think that the print book will be available somewhat before that
okay.
through Amazon and some of the other sites. So I'm very excited about getting this far.
I'm excited for you, and I'm going to send our listeners to your website, SharonKMiller.com. That's a great place to start to get a copy of the Clay series. I am so thrilled that we met today, Sharon, and thank you for giving us kind of a sneak peek behind what inspired you to become so involved with this project, and I'm thrilled that you were able to share it with us today. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, and if you come back to go to Catalina State Park again, One of the things that I do on behalf of my readers is that I hold, I do a little picnic at Catalina State Park, and we do a walking tour and book talk of the Romero Ruin. And it's a little too hot to do that now in the desert, but I've had two of them within the past year and expect to have another one in the fall. So I'll let you know if you're around. Certainly welcome to join us.
Absolutely. I would love that. And we'll post that on the site as well for folks that are in the area that may want to join you. Again, thank you so much.
I do appreciate being here. It's been great fun talking with you.